ICQ Podcast episode 425, getting ready for portable operations. Well, hello fellow Amateur Radio enthusiasts, and welcome to this 425th episode of the ICQ Amateur Radio Podcast, supported this episode by our monthly and subscription donors. In this episode, we join Martin, M&RB, Chris, Mike Zero, Tango Charlie Hotel, Bill, Whiskey Charlie 3, Bravo, and Leslie, Golf Zero, Charlie India, Bravo, to discuss latest Amateur Radio news. Myself, Colin M6PRA, rounds up the news in brief, and this episode's feature is getting ready for successful portable operations. Well, as always, it's your very kind donations that help us pay our way and keep your ICQ podcast show advert-free, and we would like to thank our annual monthly subscription donors for helping us out this episode. If you find value for what we covered in this episode, there's a very easy way you can show your support. You go to icqpodcast.com/donate, choose one of our options there or make up one of your own, and say send it our way, and everything you send us goes towards our running costs and keeping your show advert-free. Right, well, now we're going to join Martin, Chris, Bill and Leslie to discuss and generate thoughts about the latest Amateur Radio news, including the passing of Bob Heil and 40 years of hams in space. As always, hope you enjoy.
Well, hi guys, and welcome to this episode's News Roundtable for the ICQ Podcast, episode 425. It's almost a year since we recorded 400, because we do 26 a year, so we're cracking on, guys. Tonight, I have Mr. Chris Howe with me, M0TCH. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Martin. Hi, guys. 425, blimey, we are. We're getting there, aren't we? 500 is just over the horizon, I think. We'll be celebrating that, I'm sure, very soon.
Yeah, it's about 3 years away, but it's
it will zip by like it has for the last year, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Moving over to the States, we have Mr. Bill Barnes, WC3B. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Martin. Hi, everybody.
Well, good to have you, and as I say, I was getting a bit worried because I'll explain in a minute, but there's not too many of us tonight. Also have Mr. Leslie Butterfield over here in the UK, G0CIB. Hi, Leslie.
Good evening, Martin. Thanks for the late call, and apologies if I didn't get your email.
Well, we got you in the end, mate. We got you in the end. And for those who are wondering what Leslie's on about, he didn't spot my email because it went into junk for him. And then I rang him up tonight and said, are you joining us? And he went, oh, no. Mr. Martin Rothwell, M0SGL, unfortunately, he does big events for a major corporate, and his event overran, and he isn't going to make it here tonight. And Frank's not particularly well today, so Frank's ducking out because he doesn't feel particularly well today. So,
get well soon, Frank.
Get well soon, Frank.
Indeed.
So let's start with the news stories. And unfortunately, it's a sad one, especially more for me. I met a gentleman. Unfortunately, Bob Heil, K9EID, became a silent key middle of last week, but a real gentleman. I don't know if the others I'm going to let you go first on this. I mean, Bill, you said you've got some of his gear?
Yes. When I first got licensed in the hobby back in the 90s, one of the pieces of good advice I was given was if you want a headset or microphone for HF that lasts, order a Heil. So I actually have, from the 1990s, still to this day, a Heil headset. And the only thing I had to replace on it was the ear pads. I wore it so much I kind of wore through the ear pads, but I put new ear pads on about 10 or 15 years ago, and I've been using it ever since. And you're correct. We met him at Dayton in 2019. Very interesting dude. He's done a lot of stuff in the music industry, a lot of stuff in the audio industry, a lot of stuff in amateur radio audio, and he took a little company they built into a worldwide manufacturer that's still going to this day. So it's sad that we lost him However, you know, I am grateful for his contributions, and I'm grateful for all the stuff that he's given over the years. The other things, like when DSP first came out, place you went to for to learn a little bit more about how to set these digital signal processors up for amateur radio, it ended up being the Heil website, because he was current, and he was ahead of the game on a lot of things. And other folks here may remember him as being one of the main hosts of Ham Nation for a lot of years. He started that video podcast up as well, and that was every Wednesday night. That was a thing for a while, to watch Bob Heil and the other folks go through the basically a video podcast. And it was good at times, and you know, like everything else, it's corny. And I'm sure, you know, I've done corny jokes too. Although we haven't done April Fool's gags in a while, guys. Hint, hint. But aside from that, it's been sad news. And I do appreciate all the other organizations that have put out notes and memories they shared of Bob. That's, you know, for as sad as the news is, it's he had a major impact. And I'm grateful folks shared their experience with him, because it was very interesting, and I learned a lot in the last week.
Yeah, let's just say, great guy. Leslie, have you got any of Bob's gear, or would you like to say something on it?
Yes, Martin, I do have one of the headphones stroke microphone. I had a bit of money from a redundancy, and I thought, you know what, I really, really want one of these pieces of kit. And if I remember right, I'm going to reiterate what has been said. He's done a lot for the music industry, a lot for audio engineering, and of course amateur radio, and he's certainly made his mark on the hobby. I understand he lost his battle with cancer, but you know, it's what we leave behind that matters, and he's certainly left his mark.
It certainly has. Chris, you were in Dayton with us. What do you think?
I think it's one word to use, really. It's his legend, isn't he? You know, Bob was, I think everyone had heard of Bob Heil in the amateur radio world, and he'll be sadly missed. He's obviously got a huge legacy. You know, he's got this, like you say, not just in amateur radio, but in the whole audio, microphone, headsets, headphones, studio equipment, you know, audio processing. You know, he's a true expert in all these things, and you know, made a successful business out of it, and that will continue, I suppose. But no, absolutely legendary, and I know everyone this week is talking of Bob and losing Bob. But yeah, it's, you know, I know we met him out in Dayton, and seemed like a really, really nice guy, very down to earth, very, you know, I know he did a lot of work with clubs and would do a lot of club talks, and really happy to share, you know, his experiences and his knowledge. So he'll be really missed. But yeah, I think an absolute legend of the amateur radio world that we lost this week.
Well, I own two Heil microphones, and I've demonstrated one of them many times when we connect it to another rig, and surprising how it's punchy and it breaks through the pileups at times. So I'm pleased with my mics. But more importantly, 2019, as Chris and said, when we were in Dayton, we managed to get to talk to Bob. And my experience of talking to Bob Heil, and my experience of him as being a really, really, really nice guy, I tipped up and said hi. Now, I'm a podcaster. At the time, he was podcasting with Ham Nation. And he said, oh, great to meet you, Martin. And I'm looking at him thinking, you're the superstar, Bob. And he said, he took his phone out of his pocket and he passed it to one of his assistants. And he said, I'm going off to talk to Martin. Don't bother us. Deal with my calls. And we walked down his stand and we stood in front of a bit of kit. And he said, don't worry, people think I'm selling it to you, and they'll leave us alone. And then he sat and he stood and he chatted with me, and he was interested in what we were doing, and I was asking him about Ham Nation. And guys, it was like talking to my dad. he was really interested, but he gave advice and politely and all sorts of bits and pieces. And I came away after 20 minutes really pleased that I'd managed to get hold of Bob and have a chat with him. And in fairness, I was rather hoping that I was going to get to meet him again this year in Dayton, but unfortunately that isn't going to happen. But in fairness, our condolences go to the whole of the Hoyle family, and Bob will be sorely missed in a number of industries. So there you go, guys. A true gentleman of our hobby. Moving to our next news story. bit of a lump in my throat on that one. YLRL celebrates International Women's Day with a special event. Now, the YLRL is Young Ladies Radio League, and they're going to do some International Women's Day events in parks. So, you know, this one will unfortunately have happened by the time we go live, but I still think it's good for the hobby. Chris, what do you think?
I think it's a great idea. I think any opportunity to get out there and operate radio, especially in the outdoors, people might come across you and ask you questions of what you're doing, etc. And it's always a great way to promote a hobby. So any special event station is always a great idea. I think especially, you know, more ladies in the hobby would be great. I think if ladies see other ladies operating radios, they might think, oh, hang on a minute, it's not just men that do that. Maybe I can give that a try. So I think this is a great idea. And yeah, it says it's celebrating their 85th year in July this year. So that's great. So yeah, I think it's a really good thing.
Yeah, 85 years. There's not many organisations go 85 years. I don't think the ICQ will make it 85 years. I'll be about 190. But there you go. Bill, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, this is a good event. They might have done this in the past. I'm not exactly sure, but I do know that they're going to do it as a Park on the Air activation day. And that's always in the States. Great way to generate pileups. These Parks on the Air stations are heavily sought after. And I wish them lots of luck as they go through this event. And I do want to do a shout out here. I believe I saw on the Ellsworth Amateur Wireless Association that podcast listener and supporter Marion N30A and her friends are going to do something for POTA. So post it on Facebook or drop me an email, Marion, and we'll talk about it next time.
Yeah, that'll be good. That'll be good if you get some feedback. Leslie, what's your thoughts on these young ladies operating and doing a Parks on the Air event to celebrate 85 years?
I think it's great, Martin. It's publicising the hobby, and it's getting what we do out there. Now, in my local club, we've got three young ladies, and they've made an impact on the club. And the grumpy men have had to sort themselves out, which is a good thing. But without their input, we wouldn't be able to run certain functions. I mean, the ladies we've got are Isabel, Rosita, and Teresa, and they're always great. So they're looking at how they put the functions together, and they put the men to shame sometimes, which is a good thing. So anything that gets a hobby known, gets the ideas of what we're doing out to the public, it's got to be a good thing.
Certainly has. And one of the most enthusiastic operators I've met in a long time is young Dorothy, who is part of Essex Hams.
I've heard of her, yes.
Yeah. You put Dorothy in front of a radio, she has a smile from ear to ear, and she just loves operating. And I met her a few times. I usually meet her three or four times in the year, but she's a really lovely person to talk to as well, guys, and a real ambassador for our hobby this side the pond. So, yeah. Right. Let's move on to the next one. ARIS celebrates 40 years of hams on the International Space Station, or in space, hams in space. That's 40 years we've been doing space. That's pretty damn good, I would suggest. I'm going to give it to Chris first. What do you think, Chris?
Well, I think it's a great organisation. You know, I spoke to Oliver Ammens, who's the, I think he's the European president of ARIS over in Friedrichshafen a couple of years ago, interviewed him there. And yeah, they're really passionate about what they do. Essentially, it's about, oh, as I'm sure everyone knows, it's about talking to astronauts on the space station. I mean, how cool is that? And I think it's a fantastic thing they're doing in terms of allowing young people to have those conversations. I think it's a really, really good advert for a hobby. It's a really good way of getting kids excited about science and space and those sorts of subjects. You know, I think it's a really good showcase for a hobby in that we can demonstrate that, you know, using a simple equipment, we can actually talk to people in space. But yeah, 40 years, I didn't realize it'd been going so long. Obviously, the space station's not been around that long. And I believe before the space station, they had other ways to talk to astronauts or other astronauts up there they could speak to on other vehicles. But I'll let the other guys talk about that. But excellent, it's 40 years, and I wish them to carry on. Really good thing to do. So I'll pass it back to you, Martin.
Yeah, so it's 40 years, a good one. So I'm going to go to Bill next because, you know, I've had quite an experience with some of this stuff, and we were discussing 40 years, some of these space stories. We were surprised just how long ago they were, weren't we?
Yeah. Although I did, you know, I've searched in here through my electronic archive and stuff, and one of my Elmers back in '92 worked a space shuttle from a handy talkie and a homemade antenna between school sessions when it was the shuttle amateur radio experiment back then with the space shuttle. And they had an article in the newspaper, and I found the photo. I'll have to throw that on the article here for the website. But anyway, yeah, the amateur radio and the International Space Station Organization, they set up all these skeds with the various schools around the world so that, you know, students get real live, you know, connection to the space station as part of the learning outcomes from our space experiments. And they just had their conference here, you know, on the 40th anniversary around there. And they had some really good speakers. That was the thing that the article was talking about. You know, the Kennedy Space Center folks, some other folks that continuously helped to get these schools connected, give out some awards. But, it's just such a good story that they've been around for 40 years with various volunteers, and it's an all volunteer organization, and they make this happen for students at the various schools around the world. It's just wonderful.
Yeah. It's a lot of work, but it's wonderful what they've done. And I think that's a credit to them. Leslie, what's your thoughts?
My thoughts are, I think 40 years is absolutely great. I just could not believe it's been going so long. The last time I heard it was when it went, they did a thing with Gilwell Park. Gilwell Park's about a mile down the road from here. And you heard literally a handheld and a dipole slung out the window. And I could hear the uplink and the downlink very, very easily. But again, and it brings so much good publicity to the hobby. And obviously what was going on with Gilwell Park went on the local WhatsApp group, so other schools got to know about it. So I think that's absolutely great, and I hope it continues.
Yeah, I think it will continue, because space is something that is still kind of magical, isn't it? Yeah, I know quite a few people have gone into space, but it's a very, very minor number compared with the population of this planet. So It's something of a specialty. So, yeah, it's something great. So good news on that one. Right. Now, another space story here. The lunar lander still functions despite landing issues. And I believe this lunar lander didn't land upright. But going forward here, this lunar lander is the first lunar lander to land on the moon that the US have put up there in 50 years. And I know when we started discussing this, Bill and I were going, it can't be 50 years, it can't be 50 years. But it is. It's over 50 years since the US put a device onto the moon. What do you think, Bill?
Yeah, the interesting thing to me was this is a private venture, and apparently it tipped over. But it's making communication from the moon. Institute Machines of Houston, Texas. Basically, they basically said, you know, it's resting on its side on a rock, but the mission's still going on, and the device is out there right now and still transmitting. And thank you for pasting the link, because I lost it. I closed the wrong web tab.
Yeah, so it's a good one there. So I think that's a real good one. Leslie, what's your thoughts?
I did chuckle, Martin, when I read that it sort of one leg was slightly squiffed. Yeah, things go wrong in space travel, and it still works. So what can one say? I'm sure they didn't design the equipment to last this long. But it certainly is. So hats off to the designers, I say.
Certainly. You got to build stuff with resilience in it and back up. And looks like whatever they built is still working. So that's a tick in the box, in my opinion. Chris, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, it's interesting because there seems to have been a real resurgence in moon related projects over the last few years. I know there's been, not just in the US, I think there's been all kinds of, you know, China, Israel, India, lots of countries that are now trying to explore the moon, as well as obviously the States as well. And yeah, there certainly seems to have been a change in approach, you know, back from the 1960s and 70s when it was all NASA, you know, doing things themselves, albeit with some help from private industry. Now it's almost like they're outsourcing this stuff to third parties. So as Bill was saying, this is a company essentially that NASA have paid to go away and do this. So Intuitive Machines were paid $118 million to do this, I believe. But yeah, it's very interesting. And yes, okay, you know, it's still, even though there's been lots and lots of activity in space, it's still not, you know, the moon's a very, very long way away. I believe that, you know, the 1969 mission to put man on the moon and a few others a few years after that, that's the first they've ever been to space, you know, human space flight. That's, you know, the ISS is very close compared to the moon, from what I understand. So it is a significant achievement to get anything to the moon, especially in a controlled way. So the fact they've managed to put this down on the ground, yeah, okay, it might have fallen over, but it's still operating, it's still useful, it's still, you know, sending data back to Earth, and that's fantastic. But yeah, I'm sure this will be one of many that to come. But yeah, certainly, just looking on Wikipedia, there's been lots of missions to the moon, not with humans on board, but there's been lots of missions to the moon, you know, some that have worked and some that have failed over the last few years from many nations. And this is another one, I suppose. I think there may be a plan to put man back on the moon, I think. In fact, not just man, but also woman as well, I understand, from NASA in the next few years. I think I heard that in the news recently as well. So certainly seems to be a resurgence in, or a renewed interest in what's happening on the moon. So it's all great. Back to you, Martin.
Yeah. Well, as I say, I think that in fairness, you know, putting some of these things into space is a great, great challenge. I think it's worked. And yeah, it does surprise me. It was over 50 years ago when the first landers were landing on the moon. It pretty much, I've lived with it the whole of my life cycle. So it's nice to see that they're probably restarting it again. And it gives us something interesting. If, as we thought before, when that other station a few weeks back was on the moon and was transmitting its telemetry back on amateur frequencies, it gives us something extra in the hobby to play with. So I think it's all good news on my part.
I just found the news story about the manned woman's missions to the moon. So there's a story from the BBC back in 2020 talking about plans to put a woman on the moon by 2024. Now, I don't know if that's still the target date, but there's definitely been some talk about that. And NASA certainly were outlining a $28 billion plan to do that. So hopefully that's still on track and we'll watch this space. But that'll be, I'm sure that'll inspire a lot of people. And yeah, that'll be good.
Certainly will inspire people. That's good. Right, move to our last news story. And this is really just a bit of fun to finish up on. UK amateurs start to use the new privileges. Chris, you spotted a couple of videos and on here. So do you want to go first?
Well, I'll talk about the first one and I'll let Bill, because I think Bill found the second one. So there's been a couple of videos on YouTube of people operating. So as well, the background is, I'm sure we've heard on previous recent episodes of the podcast that, and it's been something talked about for a while, in the UK, we've just starting to get our new privileges on our licenses. So this I think this is sometime in February when that was kind of went live. It's been talked about since last year. There was a consultation. Ofcom asked amateurs what they thought, a license review, and that's now finally gone live with the first phase of the new privileges. So one of the things we're allowed to do now is to operate aeronautical mobile. Now, I believe it's only on the bands where we're the primary user, and I believe it's only fairly low power. And I forget, I'm sure somebody else will tell me what the power is in a minute. So I spotted a video on YouTube. So Pete Sipple, M0PSX, you may have heard his name because he's very heavily involved with Essex Ham. Another chap called Mike Lynn, G1KOT. On the 3rd of March, they flew out from Southend Airport on a little Cessna, I think a Cessna 172, I think, little light aircraft, a little private aircraft. And they operated aeronautical mobile on the 2 meter band over Essex. So really good at that. I'm not sure if it was the first people to do that. Somebody else might have beaten to it. I'm not sure. So I think I saw another video as well, actually, on YouTube of someone else doing something similar. So I'm not sure who got there first, but great thing to do. Congratulations on those guys for getting up there and giving it a try. I think they made a couple of contacts from up there. So yeah, well done. Well done to them. And yeah, if you want to watch the video, just do a search on YouTube. And I'm sure you find it. I think the call sign is, sorry, not call sign. I think the title on YouTube is a UK first, Mike G1KOT Aeronautical Mobile. So do a search for that. I'll just find the Essex Ham team YouTube channel and you'll find that video. And yeah, it's nice to go and watch someone trying something out for the first time.
Certainly is. And thinking about it while you were saying this, we have a listener that flies microlights quite regularly, Nick Major. And I got a feeling Nick will be doing some aeronautical mobile because we get lots of nice pictures occasionally from Nick on Facebook of what he's up to. And I know he's a listener because I've spoken to him on the digital talk group as well. But the other one then, Bill, Cullum, M0MCX was doing some things, wasn't he?
Yep. Just to flip back here quick, Artemis 3 is scheduled for 2026 now, Chris.
Okay. Well, it slipped, but, you know, I guess that's to be expected, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just happy it's not canceled.
Yeah.
So that'll be a good mission to watch. But yeah, the YouTube algorithms, while I was looking up something else, suggested this video from Cullum, M0MCX. He is the DX commander. He's the guy that invented that and sells that antenna. But he got to use a kilowatt, and he was on 40 meters working Japan. And I laugh because at first it seemed funny, but I realized from here where I'm at in North America, hitting Japan doesn't seem that big of a deal. But then I, put in the great, that round great circle map. Sorry, my brain mixed the letters up in my head. Used the great circle map, and to go from the UK to Japan is quite a haul. So especially on 40. So I got to watch him work a bunch of stations on 40 meters, and he put it on YouTube, and it's nice to see that someone is safely using a kilowatt and having a good time on the radio with it.
Yeah, that's a good one. Well, I have had a contact with Japan from the UK. SSB Field Day in the UK usually corresponds with the work tour Asia. And you hear a Japanese say, "Ah, great, it's Japan." And you go back to them and they go, "Wrong contest, go away." And you think, "Oh, dear, I could have given you some points. You could have given me some, but never mind." But the kilowatt. Well, the only way I could work a kilowatt is to close the park behind my house so no dog walkers can get over there and put my antenna in the middle of the park and run a massive amount of cable to it, which would probably mean I'd have to run 2 kilowatts to make it with the cable losses.
That's a good point, because I think part of the reason we've been given these new privileges is because we now need to do, and Leslie's the expert on this, really is the true expert on this, we now have to do an RF safety assessment. So we may be allowed to run a kilowatt, but only if it's safe to do so, and we have to prove it's safe to do so by doing that assessment. So you make a very good point. We may be allowed to use a kilowatt, but I ain't using it in my garden, because there's no way I'm going to comply with the rules if I try that in my area, because I've got far too many houses nearby, etc. So, you know, with privileges come responsibilities. So I think you make a good point about not being able to do it from home particularly.
Oh, yeah, just tack on that quick before Leslie explains the maths. But I'm in the opposite situation. I live in a rural area. My antenna is high and inaccessible. So I could, in theory, run a gallon and a half, 1.5 kilowatts. But the reality is my antenna design, it's a large 80-meter full-wave horizontal loop. I'm going to burn up the equipment if I try that, because the matching device, there's no way that matching device could do more than maybe 200 watts at SSB. It's just not beefy enough to take that kind of power level and transform that impedance that it needs to transform and to make that antenna work.
Yeah, that's the problem, is logistics, I think. Leslie, what's your thoughts?
Well, the comments about not being able to run the power limit depends where, you know, depending upon where you are. I think those comments are absolutely spot on. If you're in a block of flats, you're not going to be able to do it. You've got to show that you're doing it safely. And to do that safely, you've got to do the assessment. And it's really painless. I said it could be done in less than 15 minutes, and other people have done it a lot quicker than that. So it's not onerous at all, and it's really is quite straightforward. Gave a talk on it at the club a couple of weeks back. But hey, going back to the changes in the license and conditions, yes, they had a consultation. There was a bit of a to him and a frown, as you would expect, and we are where we are now. And there's been some, should we say, the restrictive practices have been removed, and it's up to radio amateurs to use them responsibly. You know, if you're in the middle of nowhere and you've got a wide open field, hey, there's no issue at all. And if you're in an aircraft, yes, you're again absolutely right. There is a power limit. Off the top of my head, I can't remember what it is, but I know it's... it's very low, and I would actually need to get the licensing conditions out. But basically, it's removing the old restrictions that we used to have. The whole idea is to make it, shall we say, more accessible. For example, we'll be running an open day soon, and hopefully we want to be able to get members of the public on the air. So these changes will enable us to do that. So let's see how they pan out, and see what happens.
Yeah. Well, I believe the aeronautical mobile power is 500 milliwatts, half a watt.
Okay.
But then again, half watt miles, 50, 60 miles on 70 sems with 1 watt from a very, very high location. So, you know, 500 milliwatts is going to go a hell of a way.
And I did chuckle earlier on about, when we were just talking about components melting, you suddenly find that there are limitations on your cable and your ATU and all this stuff. So it's not just a case of buying the amplifier. You've got to design your station properly.
Oh, yeah. from start to finish, from antenna to ground, you got to change everything for the handle.
Absolutely.
And the most, the two, sorry, Chris, I keep stepping on you, but the two brief things that I noticed the most with matching boxes is you'll run amounts of power and it will actually destroy the cable. It'll burn up. Or the other one is it'll destroy the iron center that you have in there that you're using as your matching device, and actually shatters those. It's just, it's mind blowing. Wow. That happens when you put too much power through them. Not that I've done that three or four times in the last 30 years.
Lots of current, lots of voltage. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's the most recent joke is I that one antenna that stopped working. I ran 100 watts at RIDI during a RIDI contest, threw it on 20 meters. And it was, you know, oh, it's just an off-center fed dipole, and it stopped matching up. And when I replaced the center with another one, it worked. And so I cut the thing apart to see what happened is, and I literally shattered the iron pieces in the middle of it with just 100 watts. And I think it's because it was continuous. I was calling CQ for like 4 hours. With like a 4 second delay between F1
Did you
don't do that again, Bill, is the moral of that story.
Yeah. I was going to add, Martin, we have spoken to Japan twice. We also spoke to Dennis No, M0NDJ, one of our members of our club, or ex-member of our club, who's a scout leader, and he was over in Japan at a jamboree a few years ago, and we had a scheduled contact with him, if you remember. We had some, well, I think we did run a bit of power for that, not a kilowatt, we were obviously within the legal limit at the time, but we did actually. Do you remember that, Martin, or not?
Yeah, I was at the scout hall. I'd forgotten about that, but yes, I was at the scout hall. Stuart and Dennis from the scout hall were out there, so yeah, that was good. I didn't work Dennis when he was in Korea, though, this time. Last year he was in Southern Korea with the scouts. I didn't manage to work him, but there you go. Right, well, that concludes the news stories, and now let's find out what the guys have been up to since the last time we spoke to them. Bill, do you want to go first on this one?
Yes, please. Been a little bit busy in the last couple of weeks between work, and it's the middle of sports season for the children, so we've been doing a lot of day trips and stuff like that for various events. But I was able to work a bunch of stations in February. It looks like about a dozen. Mostly FT8, few SSB, because we had some really good SSB days. The most interesting DX for me is I actually worked St. Helena on FT8 17 meters the other day. And I thought I worked that before, but according to my logbook, I have not. So that's a new click on the DXCC for me once I get that confirmed. And that's about all that's been going on this month.
All right. Well, at least you got a new one, which is a good one.
Oh, did I also mention the TNC I built? I think I posted that on Facebook.
Talked about it initially, Bill, but you didn't give us a total update on it.
Oh, yeah. So I somehow burned out the pick chip on my TNC Pi somewhere in the point in human history, because I haven't used it for a lot of years. And some folks sent me an email about locally, they're starting up 2 meter packet again, and there's some activity. So I end up buying a TNC Pi kit, not a TNC Pi kit. No, I had the TNC Pi. This one is, my brain just went blank. Anyway, I bought a kit, I put it together in a couple hours, and I'm back on packet again. And I even printed it's the Nino TNC, that's right. N-I-N-A TNC. It's a terrestrial amateur radio pack or packet radio group here in the States. They sell the boards with the pick chip program, and then you have to just order some parts and solder the thing up. And so I've been every couple days here jumping on packet, jumping around on the various nodes to see what's available in it. And they're right, there's a lot of stuff here on the 2 meter frequency, so that's coming back. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Well, I might have another look at that myself, because I came across an old TNC I bought years ago, and I used it for a while when I was doing APRS, but in the very early days of APRS. But yeah, say good if it's coming back.
Real quick on that, just make sure you check the battery, because I have a bunch of TNC2 here, the old TNC2s from the 80s. Most of them had corroded batteries, so they needed repaired. So that's another item on the list. But just check the batteries first before you plug that in.
Yeah. Well, I didn't think there was batteries in mine. However, I bow to your greater knowledge. I'll have it apart tomorrow to make sure that everything's okay.
Yeah, it's a watch. It was a watch battery to back up the settings.
Like
your call sign and stuff in it. That's it. Multiple ones I have here have corroded over the years, so I probably should have kept better watch on those.
Well, that's good advice, Bill. Good advice. Leslie, what have you been up to?
What have I been up to, Martin? I've been continuing, as some of you know, I'm sort of a member of the Silverthorn Radio Club, and I've been working on their ICAR archive material. And it's taken up a lot of my time. So what I've been doing is I've been putting some all the old photographs together, making them all good, and just putting the history of the club together. But this is all sort of have a bit of a purpose behind it, because what we've also managed to do is we've paid to have a stall on the Chingford Village Festival in June. So the idea is that we can put up a display where the club started, the things they got involved in, what we're doing now, type of activities we're doing, all this type of thing. And we're going to have sort of photographs. It cost me an absolute fortune on cartridge ink. You know, as you're watching the ink going down and the colour ink going down and realising how much it's costing. But the whole idea is to promote the hobby. And we really, really look forward to having a good stand in June. So what we're doing, this is all in preparation for it. And obviously, what we're trying to do as well is to get more members into the club. That's the aim. So that's what's been happening in the background, Martin.
Yeah, good news. And hopefully we'll get some new members. And getting out in the public eye is always good for our hobby. Chris, what have you been up to?
Not a huge amount. We've got a new member of the club, so I've been showing her some. So she's not got a license yet. She's quite keen to get involved and get a license. So I've been going through some of the basic stuff from the foundation. Look, it's not a training course. I'm just sort of giving her the basics of what it's all about. So that's been quite good to get someone new involved in the hobby. We had a club meeting last month. Mike Richards did a talk for us about SDR. Kind of without the maths. So it's actually quite good to someone to explain to us without going into lots of mathematical equations how SDR works. So that was an excellent talk, and we got some good feedback from that. What else? I am getting rid of, I've got a couple of cars. I've got an old Volvo that I only ever use once in a blue moon, which is now kind of getting to the point where it's kind of getting to the end of its useful life. So I need to take the radio out of that. I've got a Yaesu radio in there. So before that makes its final journey to the scrapyard fairly soon, I need to deinstall that. So that'll be spare. What else? I've been buying things from AliExpress recently. they're quite crafty with their marketing. The app sends you notifications constantly, and it nags you to look at it. So I bought a little Morse key from AliExpress, a little tiny paddle, because a couple of other guys have got the same one up at the radio club. So I got one of those. And I'm not an expert on Morse. So I sort of know the basics, but that could be useful for, portable operation. Interestingly, you mentioned about Nick Major earlier. I know Nick's one of the listeners to the podcast. And I think his call sign is G0HFL, I think. I'll double check that in a second. I know that, as you said, Martin, I know that he's very interested in doing his aviation. I know he's got has access to, or I'm not sure if he owns it, or so I know he flies a micro light. I'm just trying to find his call sign, sorry. But yes, I also know he's a very keen Morse operator. So I actually wonder if he might be the first person to operate Morse code on perhaps 2 meters or something from aeronautical. That would be a good first. So Nick, if you're listening, there's a little challenge for you. Maybe give that a try. By the way, don't do that if it's dangerous. Flying the things will be far more important than operating Morse code. But G0HFL is Nick's call sign. So you never know. You might hear Morse from the skies sometime soon. But please, Nick, don't do that if it's going to endanger anything at all. Other stuff, yeah. Also, a couple of guys at the Red Club bought a device called a Morserino, which is a little board, I think it might be a kit, I'm not sure, but it's a really cool bit of kit. It lets you practice Morse code. It's even got a built-in transceiver. It'll decode Morse, and we had a little play with that the other day. And it looks quite, it is a kit. I'm just looking at the website now. Quite an interesting piece of kit. So if you're into Morse code, want to learn it, a Morserino might be quite a good thing to get hold of. And then finally, Martha, I know we've been doing some more planning for our trip to Dayton in May, so that's now coming together quite nicely. So Colin and yourself, Martin, and I are coming over. So if you're going to be there, we might see you there. But that's it from me, Martin. Thank you.
Yeah, well, sounds like you've been busy. And Dayton's getting closer and closer, Chris. We'll be with you, Bill. And see how it all goes out there. We're very looking forward to that one. Okay, what have I been up to? Very quickly, you know that I've mentioned a couple of times that Frank and I are doing some pilot work on a thing called Smart Radio. Smart stands for Saturday Morning Amateur Radio Time. And we've run 3 sessions now at our local library. Frank run one last Saturday in the States in Madison County. We've got another Saturday morning session this week coming up, so hopefully we'll get a few more interesting people along as well. I have been actually playing HF. God forbid, most of you just fell off your chair, because I don't very often do HF. Yeah, well, don't
Dunker.
Yeah, but I've actually been on 40 metres, 20 metres, 17 and 10 from home, running about 20 watts. That's the safe part for my aerial. Running 20 watts, and I've had some reasonable contact, so I've been quite pleased. The bands have been quite happy. I've also done some VHF work while I've been in the car and via the hotspot on the talk group. Although, I think it was about a fortnight ago, there was a small outage of the talk group at my end because the D-Star transcoder runs at my house. It's complicated. I can't put it on the main server up in the data center because it requires an external dongle. So it runs at my house, and unfortunately, I get up one morning and my computer didn't work. And I look around, and the router's flashing away, and the internet's going, and I checked, and sure enough, the router was up. And the Wi-Fi was up on that particular router was up because it's got a five gig thing. But nothing else in the house is working. And then when I look around the back, the first switch I've got, a 16 port Netgear switch, the power supply died, the little wall wart. Instead of putting out 13.8, it was down to 2.5 volts, so that was a dead one. So we did that. Then, so that's back up and working anyway. Fairly quickly, I found another wall wart and we got it going. But yeah, just an interesting one in the morning. Took my 817, my FT817, to the club on Monday. Once again, I was showing a Bluetooth connection, so I've got a little Bluetooth device plugs in the back of the 817. And you can control it via a tablet or your phone. And once I got it set up and was showing it working, the guys were quite happy. And I said, well, we might as well use your one, Rick Martin, instead of the other one. And my poor little FT817 actually got some life in CW. Not by me. I didn't do it, but they were sending CW quite happily on it and getting contacts, which worked quite well. But before we got it all working, I got caught with yet another fuse that was playing Silly Devils. I mentioned this a few weeks back in one of the features, where I had a voltage drop across a fuse. I had another fuse do exactly the same thing. It's a bit, it was, although it wasn't glowing white and light, it was a bit like a light bulb. If you do, if you set up a little circuit, and I've done this for students, you put a 3-volt battery, so you know what the voltage is, you measure the current through a light bulb, you measure the current, you didn't do the maths, you come out with a resistance, right? And then while you keep the students talking and you've unplugged the battery, the bulb's cooling down. You say, now measure the bulb, and of course it's short circuit. And they say, well, this Ohm's law doesn't work. They don't realise that the bulb when it's hot is a higher resistance. Well, my fuse was about 7 ohms. So I'm dropping 7 at an amp, I'm dropping 7 volts across this damn fuse when it's working. Take it out and measure it, and it measures short circuit. Put it back in, you're dropping 7 volts across it. And I ended up having put another fuse in. Everything worked perfectly okay. So, yeah, interesting one. I've been caught twice with that one now. And last but not least, end of the month, on the 24th of this month, the ICQ podcast will be down in Dover for the Dover Rally. Looking forward to that one, guys. So if you're at the Dover Rally, pop by and say hi. So that's what I've been up to. And as I say, a lot going on, boys, I'd suggest, which is good news. So all that's left for me to do now is to thank the guys for turning up and move on to the next part of the podcast. I'd like to thank Mr. Chris Howard, M0TCH.
Thank you, Martin. Thank you, guys.
No problems. Good to have you. I'd like to thank Mr. Bill Barnes, WC3B.
Thank you, Martin. Thank you, everybody. And I'm on HF right now.
You little devil, you.
FT8, you can turn the volume on.
All right. Okay. And last but not least, I'd like to thank Mr. Leslie Butterfield, G0COB. Thanks, Leslie.
Thanks for inviting me, Martin. Being some good topics tonight.
Yeah, right, guys. So 73, so we'll catch you soon. 73.
73.
Cheerio.
73.
For all the news, links and information, visit www.icqpodcast.com.
And now it's time to have a look at the news in brief for me, Colin, M6BOY. We start off with an announcement by Brandmeister that they've announced they've integrated Tetra into their Brandmeister DMR network. Tetra improves upon DMR by utilizing 4 time slots, 4 duplex conversations, and superior voice quality. We'll pop a link to the announcement for you on the ICQ podcast website so you can check that out if you so desire. Great opportunity here if you're aged between 18 and 25. The RSGB is looking to put together a YOTA team to take place in the YOTA Czech summer camp this year. So you've got to be passionate about all things radio, ready to experiment, make new friends and shape the future of ham radio, and be able to fill in an application form. So again, links that on the ICQ podcast website for you if you're aged between 18 and 25 and wish to go to Czech Republic this summer. And we finish off with a interesting special event station for National Pi Day. Pi Day is on the third month of every year, on the 14th day, so the 14th of March. And on Echolink, Rockham will be running a session, a net there, and they'll also be covering it as well on All Star as well. So on Echolink and All Star. So again, a great opportunity to get on with these guys from Rockham as they celebrate Pi Day. Right, well, now we head over to our features episode, which is getting ready for successful portal operation. As always, hope you enjoy.
And now, what you've all been waiting for, this episode's feature from the ICQ podcast. Hi guys, for this feature, I'd like to talk about getting ready for a successful portable operation. Now, some of this I've probably told you before. Other bits I won't have done. So, in fairness, it's either going to be a reminder or for new people to the hobby, hopefully you'll find it even more useful. So, apart from planning where you're going to go and when you're going to go, because that's important to know where, you know, it's no point in turning up somewhere where the car park's going to be absolutely full and you can't get in there. So, obviously, that's one of the things to check. But I'm going to start a bit further into it than that. Let's check the equipment out. Now, one of the things you could very well do is have an equipment checklist. So when you're getting ready to go out, you can just have a look at the checklist, check it so you've got all the bits and pieces, and go from there. Now, one of the things I'm thinking, you know, obviously you're going to take a radio of some description, but don't forget to take a copy of the manual. And I say a copy of the manual because I normally print another copy of the manual and write all over it and highlight it. And that's the one you want to take with you because it will have the areas that you need to look up quick, possibly highlighted because you've been there before. Connectors. You know, what type of connectors you're going to use? I tend to operate at a BNC as much as possible because it's easy to connect and disconnect. But if you've got PL259 plugs and one thing or another, you may very well wish to have adapters with you that will allow you to connect the two different types together. Once again, make sure you've got your adapters with you. The feeder, make sure you've got some feeder with you. Is your feeder okay? Have you checked it? Has it got any splits in it? You know, it's no good sticking a voltmeter on it and going, oh yeah, it's continuity. If you've got an antenna analyzer, you can always put the antenna analyzer on it and put a dummy load the far end and away you go. Now, it doesn't have to be a high power dummy load when you're testing with an antenna analyzer and possibly one of the old coax network terminators would actually do all right. However, if you haven't got one, a 47 or a 51 ohm resistor, a carbon resistor that is, soldered across the connector will work just as well. Check your antenna, make sure that that's all okay and any extending ropes and that haven't perished. So that's another thing you need to do. And, well, another thing I would suggest is parts for different parts of the band. Are you going to have to use, say, a link dipole where you're making and breaking connections? Do you have separate links there? So make sure you've got all the bits and pieces for that. Now, on the power front, obviously, and this is so stupidly obvious, but we all forget at times, your power battery. It needs to be fully charged before you go. And I'd suggest at this point in time, you have some spare fuses, not only for your radio, but any extension leads you have connected going along the way. On my extension leads, I fitted LEDs across the 12-volt line. So if I've got an extension lead plugged in and it lights up, I'm reasonably sure, not 100%, but I can be about 99% sure, the power has got to the end of the extension block I'm using. And it's only one LED and a resistor when you make these up to just show that you actually got power there. So that could be a useful one for you. Now, don't forget, one of the easiest things to forget is we've got all the radio stuff, but we've got to take paper or a book to write things down in. Pens. I say pens more than one because, you know, if it's cold, one might not want to run, or a pencil, all those sort of things. And I suggest some form of information pack. If you're a member of a club, at least what your club name and where they meet and one thing or another, print a few copies of that out on some A4 paper, and you cut it in half. So it's A5 to give to somebody. They've got a web address to contact yourself or the club if they're interested in what you're doing. Now, I would suggest one of the major most important things is if you're going out portable, make sure you tell somebody where you're going. That's one of the most important things. And make sure not only they know where you're going, but your likely time to return home. Because if you're not back to after dark, that could be quite a frightener for somebody. So try on that and make sure that you're correct. Now, we've got all the radio gear, so we all fit out, but don't forget, we need other things. If you're out somewhere, there might not be facilities. You may very well need to carry some water with you or a hot drink with you and maybe a bit of food if you're out for a long period of time. So just bear in mind you things like that you may need to pack. And not necessarily for everybody, but it might be worth packing some headache tablets just in case you get a rotten headache while you're out. The last thing is you want to ruin your operating, and that might solve your problem very quickly and quite cheaply. One of the other things I've been thinking about, and I'm just starting to put one together for my operation, is a simple toolkit you take with you. Now, that means not a full repair, I'm going to repair the radio and I'm going to build whatever. Just a simple toolkit. Things like a decent screwdriver, Phillips and flat blade, a decent set of screwdrivers. Something like a 13mm and a 10mm spanners. They're the two main nut sizes that very often amateurs use, 13 and 10mm. Don't forget, a cheap multimeter may be very, very, very useful to you. And while you're out in the field, just to check that the voltage is there or a fuse hasn't blown. As I said earlier, I have a LED on my 12-volt extension leads at the end of them, so I know there's power there. On my big output block that I sometimes put on the end of a lead, I also have an analog meter. I say analog meter because sometimes these digital voltmeters can generate noise. And they don't have to be on all the time. What you do is you put your analog meter in circuit and you just push a push button and it shows you what the voltage is. That can be useful as well. So other tools you might need, a pair of side cutters, a pair of pliers, quite useful. Now, I have had to solder two or three times when I've been out portable and it's not the easiest of things to do. All joking aside, I fixed Chris Howard's antenna once by heating up a coin on the gas and with a pair of pliers and soldering with that. Not ideal. That was a real MacGyver moment where we had to get something working quick. However, other times I've used a soldering iron. Now, you don't want to carry too much with you. I would suggest that there's lots of ways you can do it, but think about one thing. When you're out in the wilds of nowhere, a light breeze cools everything down very, very quickly. So I would suggest a battery-powered soldering iron is not a lot of use. I would suggest I have used inverters, 12 volts to 240 volts, to use a standard soldering iron, done that one. And I've used the gas soldering iron. I would suggest the gas ones get hot very quickly and stay hot. So they might be your best bet. But once again, you've got to make sure you've got gas with it. So it's horses for courses. You may wish to take soldering iron. You may not, but it could be of use getting things fixed. And if you're going to solder in a field, try and put a containment area around the soldering you're doing. So if you've got a cardboard box, turn it over on its side, put the wires or whatever you're doing inside the box, and then work in the box, so you're shielding it from any draft. That works a lot better. And lastly, I would suggest you'll probably find that lead solder would be a far better bet to fix things in the field because it has a much lower melting temperature and it's less likely to solidify while you're trying to do work in the field. So that's just a thought I've had on this one. Okay, now moving on to not so much radio stuff, but still very important. The correct clothing for the time of year you're out and about, and the time of day. Don't just think, oh, it's the middle of summer, so I can go out in my T-shirt and I'll be perfectly okay. Because if you're sitting operating in the middle of summer with a light breeze, you'll get cold quite quick because you're not up and about generating heat. So I've seen people walking along paths nearby me and they're in their T-shirts and it's all great. And I'm sitting there with a jumper on because I'm not generating the heat. Right? You need to be aware of that. But also proper wet dry clothing is another one that's important. Now, if you go out portable, you might be going doing summits on the air, in which case this next thing is not important. But if you're doing parks or just a casual activation portable, you might want to think about, are you going to operate from the car or are you going to try and use a table and chairs? If you're using a table and chairs, then you obviously need to check that over the winter, while they've been packed away in the garage or wherever in the shed, the canvas hasn't rotted. Because the last thing you want to do is drag all the stuff to a location, sit on a chair and it's split, and then you haven't got a chair for the afternoon. A little bit annoying. The other one is, unfortunately, my car decides that you can't have the tail lift open for long periods of time. So I can't operate from the back of my car under the tail lift because after about 10 minutes he says, oh, you should have this shut, and shuts the tail lift on me. So that's another thing to think about when you're doing it. Don't forget, though, if you're going out, two's always better than one. If you've got somebody with you, if you get stuck into a problem area, having a second pair of hands or help with you is often very, very useful. Even if they're not radio amateurs, you might find that your partner may wish to come along and operate or help you operate as well. Lastly, and I know we always say amateur radio works, and it does, but make sure you've got your phone fully charged if you're out, or a way of charging it either from the car, or there are these little 12-volt adapter things that you plug a 12-volt into 12 volts, and then they have a USB-A, which supplies the power in a socket. So just little things. I know I've probably told you some of these before, but we're now getting into the Northern Hemisphere's summer. So let's hope we have some good operations. And for you guys in the Southern Hemisphere, it's almost the reverse for you, checking it all works before you pack it away. I hope this has been of use.
Whether it's across the pond or over the channel, the ICQ podcast is international.
Herzlich willkommen in Deutschland.
Good evening.
73 de España.
By amateurs, for amateurs.
Well, everybody, I hope you really enjoyed our feature this episode, getting ready for a successful portable operation. And as always, we'd like to hear from you, your feedback, and you can get in contact by going to the contact us section of icqpodcast.com, and it'd be great to hear your feedback. As always, we'd like to thank Chris, Mike Zero, Tango Charlie Hotel, Bill, Whiskey Charlie 3 Bravo, and Leslie, Golf Zero Charlie India Bravo, for taking part in the news roundtable with Martin MNMRB. We always like to thank our monthly and subscription donors that have helped us keep paying our way and say keep your show advert free. If you've enjoyed this episode or found out something interesting that you'd like to show your value for, please visit icqpodcast.com/donate, where say whatever you send away goes towards keeping your show on the air. Well, that just about wraps up episode 425 of your Amateur Radio Podcast. As always, guys, continue to enjoy the hobby, and we'll catch up again in a fortnight's time. 73's all.